Blog Talk Radio.
On the Edge, real talk about real issues.
Welcome, everybody, to the On the Edge show with Katie Bonnet and friends. There has been a little bit of a delay in start. We have some bad weather going on here in New York. It's some heavy wind, something like a hurricane wave and thunderstorm. So, guys, bear with me tonight if things go wrong, and I'm sorry about the late start. So let's get our shout-outs out the way. We're going to go to Barry Mason. Well, first, thanking God for being here. Barry Mason, formerly of 98.7 KISS FM Radio in New York City, currently with isolradio.com. You can hear Barry do his thing on Saturdays from 7 to 10 p.m., again on Sundays from 6 to 10 p.m. When he's not doing that, he is graced in New York City with the best of live R&B events. Ladies and gentlemen, this is no exception for Barry. He's got quite a bit of a big lineup for the month of July. So hit him up on his Facebook page at Barry Mason on Facebook, or go to track1entertain.web.com and see what he's up to on his calendar. To my team, Lady Diamond, Elaine Yevis, DJ Dilmer, Rodney Williams, both of you, I wish the best in what's going on with you to hurry and recover. I want to thank Monster Miles, and I want to thank our activists and panelists from Toledo, Ohio, Deacon Betty Williams. Thank you for all that you have done. Very much I appreciate all that you do on and off the air and in your personal communities. To my panelists, Patrick Irvine, Carl Tone Jones, Alcerique Atkins, Thalo Jenkins, Darlene and Arlene, the Cox twins, and I want to thank our newest addition, Ms. Erica Talbot, as well as those that have been joining in this week. Thank you very much for joining in on this important series. I want to thank my social media groups, the On the Edge Listeners Lounge with Katie Barnett. Professor Carl Tone Jones was also tonight's sponsor, and the What About Us group, Patrick Irvine, Urban Intellectuals Open Discussions group, to Marvin Young and the Capitalist End group, Linda Miller, the Black Love and Conversations group, and Mark Pittman with the Real World Black News and Discussions group and the Black History Suppress group. Thank you guys for your constant feedback on the pre-broadcast discussions as well as other things that you have suggested and helped move along here. Thank you very much for that. I want to thank all of you that have been calling in, been inboxing me, messaging me, hitting the boys, the Blog Talk Radio, server chats, everything. Thank you all very much. We are continuing part three of our week-long Battling Domestic Violence series. Tonight we're going to be touching on our children. It's called Killing the Breeding Ground for Our Kids. We need to touch on why is it that with all the newest additional support groups, advocacy groups, anti-violence movements, all of these government-funded assistance programs to stop this horrible thing, is not only domestic violence continuing, but teen domestic violence is on the rise and spreading. It's continuing to spread. So tonight we're going to be touching on everything that contributes, that starts this, that helps it fester and helps it flourish, and we are going to be discussing solutions as usual in part two. So with that being said, we're going to go out with Sean Colvin, Sunny Came Home, which is a tribute to abuse, and a word from our sponsors. And when we get back, we will continue this discussion. So don't go away. Keep it locked with me. I'll be right back.
Thank you.
New York, New York. There's no place like it. You figure that out when you find yourself in a bit of trouble while vacationing or visiting in Florida. And Florida cops are sure as heck not like New York City cops. You're feeling more than put out or simply just confused with it all. But you want justice. You need it to be right, and you want someone who understands where you're coming from. You need Kenneth Foote, attorney at law. Graduate of St. John's University and Florida Stetson University, he'll make sure you're back on track and everything's straightened away. Driving violations, personal injury, drug charges, he's here to work with you as well as for you. Leave nothing to chance. K.L. Foote, attorneys at law, 877-90-FOOTE or klfoote.com. Kenneth Foote, the New Yorker to contact in Florida.
The On the Edge Show with KD Barnett and friends, the show that gives you real talk about real issues, needs your help. KD and the gang are seeking out individuals and local business sponsors to help fund their projects for youth and minority communities to become re-empowered, featuring programs like the Spread Your Wings Showcase, offering free advertising to up-and-coming entrepreneurs, Youth Day giving public school grades 4 to 12 a taste of the arts, and All Hands on Deck, our new writer's showcase. On the Edge is looking to give back to our communities by giving our youth a future. Your small contribution will make a difference. Individuals or small businesses can choose to be a sponsor for any amount of time. And businesses can also choose to advertise with us at very reasonable rates. Choose any type of show sponsorship, and you just may be a sponsor for a life. Visit us at Facebook at facebook.com On the Edge Show for more information on how you can be a part of our vision. We hope to see you there.
Now, back with more On the Edge.
Welcome back, everybody, to the On the Edge Show with Katie Barnett and friends. I'm your host, Katie Barnett, and we are continuing on with our Battling Domestic Violence series. Those of you who have been following us since part one, you have heard that many of our guests that have called in really have touched on some very deep, intense, and important points. We've also spoke on some really important and favorable solutions into getting started. And the whole point is now that many of us didn't hear that some things could be a solution. Well, now it's time for us to get acting. And tonight we're going to be speaking about the effects, the rising and continually increased occurrences of teen domestic violence. Now, domestic violence on the whole is already a rapid, widespread, viral infection into society. Definitely, we have some high instances in the African-American community. We've discussed getting to the root of the problem for adults. Now let's speak about the effects on children. More and more and more cases of teen domestic violence are being reported. More and more fatalities are coming out of it, be it, you know, permanent injuries or actual deaths. More and more of our children are actually being killed at the hands of domestic violence. You heard from one of our panelists, who's also our activist and a regular and a team member, Deacon Debbie Williams, speaking about his two atrocities in his life that has gone to domestic violence. One of them was to a teen domestic violence. What, with everything that has been put in place in modern day age, with all of the government funding and the public awareness and the political activism on publicly being aware and being active against this violent situation, why is it that this is still continuing? Why is it in the face of all of these barriers against violence, against domestic abuse, against domestic violence, why are all these things in place but yet nothing's happening? So you all know, before we get into the group chat, that there's my two cents in the matter. Well, I think it's more than just battling the problem when it happens. The reactive responses are not enough. The proactive actions are what we need. These are things that are not starting when the teens are teens. This has been something that has been implanted, exposed, they have been involved with, and it has not been addressed. We had another caller who explained that we just don't have real productive and progressive ways of having these abusers channel their anger, deal with their problems. If adults can't do it, if there are adult abusers who don't know how to do this and we're supposed to be the mature ones, how much harder do you think it's going to be on a group of citizens that are still trying to find their way and just figuring out who they are? And if the people in place before them who are supposed to be their first guides or their guides along through this process are not together themselves, it's going to be a mutated scenario with these children mimicking something that adults with maturity problems or anger management problems or inner demons can't deal with. It's going to be twice as bad because you're dealing with a group of children who haven't got their mindset straight, who don't have the comprehensibility to know what it's like to deal with the things that go with whatever the incident or the situation is. For example, they're involved with sex and it's just about the physical aspect of sex, the actual act, not what comes with it, not the things that can come from it, not the emotional and physical, and not the physical, but the emotional and the mental part of sex. If they're not able to do that, dealing with sex and going through the motions just means they can do the act. It doesn't mean that they are capable of dealing with the work that goes into it. So imagine trying to deal with being a person in a relationship. So how do we get started with figuring out what to do? We all know that part two of this segment will be about solutions, but there's not a reason in the world why we can't sit here in part one and address it as we should. Our children are growing up in houses that, be it the economy, be it the political stances, be it the budget cuts, be it the racism, the discrimination, be it the anger that people have, the detachment in certain states between its citizens, all of these things are in place to give a person with an anger problem no hope. Starting from the cycle that they came from. The old days where parents were just parents and really there wasn't an open communication because we were taught that the older people, children are supposed to be seen and not heard. We spoke about the domestic violence festering in a mindset or the old unspoken rule that what goes on in this house stays in this house. We spoke about the other factors about men not being able to channel their hurt, their pain, because they're taught that the macho part of being a man means that it doesn't afford you the luxury. It doesn't afford you the right to cry, to be angry, to address it, to be soft for that moment, to be weak in that moment, to admit that you need help. Let's talk about the fact that bullying is a problem because bullying can fester this anger into a person who never felt they got to address or fight back or defend themselves properly. Let's talk about the fact that the community has failed our youth and ourselves pretty much with their lack of involvement. Let's talk about the fact that these laws in place to stop the criminal has become a catch-22 because the victim has only a small window to really have rights. Domestic violence is as bad as a cancer. And there's more to it. Because at least with cancer, you know what the problem is. There's a possible treatment for it. There's a way to keep something that's terminal under control long enough for you to live out whatever time you have. Whatever mental state that you get into from dealing with the disease. There are actual treatments for it that can help you cope with it. But you know what? Domestic violence has ghosts that nobody can honestly say has been treated and is being addressed. We spoke on that yesterday. Therapy is not 110% guaranteed that because the person seems to be responding to treatment means they really are. There are so many things that are involved with the damage and the victimization that domestic violence claims and implements. So there's nothing that guarantees you that this has been solved. You don't know what's in the mind of an abuser who walks out saying that they're going to follow a certain protocol but yet goes out and commits the crime again. The more laws that are in place to stop a person without actually taking them out of the situation and keeping them away from their targets and really getting to the bottom of it and really putting the message in their head that we're trying to get to the bottom of why you are an abuser. There's no guarantee that this is going to stop the problem. But what there is a need and an obligation for is for us to continue to keep our eye keen and sharp on this growing and rapidly spreading problem and not letting up. Treating it as treating an abuser like an alcoholic, that they are continuously recovering, they are continuously dealing with this problem. Because not only are the victims they've already touched and damaged are in danger, but the people that they're setting their sights on to repeat the cycle with. Now let's speak about our target focus tonight, our teens. We know why it happens. Some kid was getting beat up by an abusive parent themselves. Some child grew up in a home where abuse was as routine as waking up and brushing your teeth in the morning. Some child watched as their mother got beat or their father got abused and sat there and nothing happened. Some child watched as the victim didn't know how to walk away and not accept it or realize that the love they felt is not the love they were given back. So they watched as either one or both of their parents either died to the situation from either being beaten down to death or a murder-type suicide. So those two parents never actually addressed and got out of the problem. Or they pretty much grew up and left their homes while it's still going on and never got the chance to address it and see that it was not right and get an option on how to do it right. So they grew up one of three ways: a repeat offender, indifferent, with no feeling and untrusting of the world, unable to accept and love themselves, unable to understand what it means to cherish a relationship, or they have to learn on their own how to survive and get through it and get over it and hopefully feel that maybe they can do different by not repeating the process. So our problem is what now? Our problem is the community. We can't stand back and let it continue. We can't say that because the police were called to our neighbor's house, that it's not our problem. We can't say that because we saw it in the news and it was around the corner from us and we don't even know that person, that it's not our problem. We can't sit idly by while some young person is beating up another person and not do something. Because if that person that was being beaten or hurt doesn't survive, it's on our hands. But if that person does survive and that child walked away with bruises for life, not only is the abuser going to be able to continue to do it to someone else, but that victim could grow up and do the same thing. Or continue to get abused because now that abuser has put in that person's head that they're not worth anything but being abused. What's the next step in line? Why is this happening? Maybe all the advocacy groups that are in place are doing something by a checklist and not really looking at the individual person. Maybe once everybody signs off at 5 o'clock at the end of the day in these places and has passed off what their protocol to the next step in the process, that they're done with it. No follow-ups, no networking, nothing. Parents, you have got to keep track of your children's activities. You have got to watch their demeanor. You have got to figure out if there's been changes. We have got to start our children young in teaching them that they are worth something better than being abused, that love is supposed to be worthy of happiness and joy, that nothing with the word love equates any physical violence, any degradation, any mental breakdown. That has to be starting from the time that they can walk and understand your words all the way through their lives. They should be confident enough that the first time they get into a situation where somebody treats them wrong one time, that they can stand up and walk away and not feel the need to be dependent on that person for completion. We need to let them understand how to be complete with themselves. Because they're being told by every outside factor that there is that they're not worthy unless they are something else. That they're not going to be talented enough in the music world if they don't look like Miley Cyrus, if they don't look like somebody that is being a candidate for A, looking like a thug or being projected as the image of one, or they're not dressed in some seductive and revealing clothing to reveal their precious body, or they're not projecting the image that the only way to make it in life is to get the fast money by any means necessary. We have to start taking away those type of icons that our children aspire to be. We have to start being accountable for what it is that is being displayed outside of our protection circle in our home. We have to make that protection circle village rich. More and more of our children are getting involved with adult relationships or adult type relationships from the age of 12. Our girls are aspiring to be somebody's girlfriend. Our boys are aspiring to be the control of somebody's daughter. Or even those that are not heterosexual couples, even that is having an issue with same-sex abuse as well. All of these people deserve to understand that this is not an acceptable situation. All of this is happening in the midst of all the anti-violence groups, in the midst of all the safe horizons that are busting their butts trying to give these victims something to do. But however, these people are in place after the fact. After something has happened, after they've been displaced from their homes and they're running in fear of their lives, what happened to the proactive assistance? What happens with the opening doors or the open door policy where somebody who feels that they're angry can walk in and say, I don't want to hurt somebody. I need help. That doesn't come from something that has been voted in and took years to build and get approval for. That starts in the village, in the community. Why are our children so dead set on becoming paired up with somebody at 14? Why is it such a big thing that a little boy feels he has to show his worth by beating up on a little girl, or even if he's not, it's not, like I said, a boy and girl relationship, why is there one person who feels that the only way that they're in control or successful is if they're beating up on someone or keeping their partner in check? Why is it that we haven't taught them that you couldn't possibly love a person and be able to want to be up under them by having to kiss through the bruises you put on their face? It's a little quiet tonight. So for those of you who are new to the protocol, the number to call here to join the panel is 347-327-9967. If you want to talk to me, you press the number 1. And you'll be on the panel and able to join me. We're going to take a little break while we get in our mics together. As I said, everyone, we are dealing with high winds and rain. We are dealing with thunder and threats of a hurricane coming through. So we are going to be dealing with a couple of ins and outs tonight. So for those of you that are listening and that have something to say or can share a story or looking for help, whatever it is, give us a call here, 347-327-9967. Let us know what it is that you are looking for, and we will be back. We're going to be going out with Hello Black and I'm the Man. When we get back, after him and a word from our sponsors, we will continue this on. Don't go away. Keep it locked with me.
Well, you can tell everybody. Yeah, you can tell everybody. Go ahead and tell everybody. I'm the man, I'm the man, I'm the man. Yes, I am, yes, I am, yes, I am. I'm the man, I'm the man, I'm the man. I believe every lie that I ever told. Paid for every heart that I ever stole. I played my cards and I didn't fold. Well, it ain't that hard when you got sold. Somewhere I heard that life is a test. I've been through the worst, but I still get my best. God made my mold different from the rest. Then he broke that mold, so I know I'm blessed. Stand up now and face the sun. Won't hide my tail or turn and run. Time to do what must be done. Be a king when kingdom comes. Well, you can tell everybody. Yeah, you can tell everybody. I'm the man, I'm the man, I'm the man. Well, you can tell everybody. Yeah, you can tell everybody. Go ahead and tell everybody. I'm the man, I'm the man, I'm the man. Yes, I am, yes, I am, yes, I am. I'm the man, I'm the man, I'm the man. I got all the answers to your questions. I'll be the teacher, you could be the lesson. I'll be the preacher, you be the confession. I'll be the quick relief to all your stressing. It's a thin line between love and hate. Is you really real or is you really fake? I'm a soldier standing on my feet. No surrender and I won't retreat. Stand up now and face the sun. Won't hide my tail or turn.
The On the Edge Show with Katie Barnett and friends, the show that gives you real talk about real issues, needs your help. Katie and the gang are seeking out individuals and local business sponsors to help fund their projects for youth and minority communities to become re-empowered, featuring programs like the Spread Your Wings Showcase, offering free advertising to up-and-coming entrepreneurs, Youth Day giving public school grades 4 to 12 a taste of the arts, and All Hands on Deck, our new writer's showcase. On the Edge is looking to give back to our communities by giving our youth a future. Your small contribution will make a difference. Individuals or small businesses can choose to be a sponsor for any amount of time. And businesses can also choose to advertise with us at very reasonable rates. Choose any type of show sponsorship and you just may be a sponsor for a life. Visit us at Facebook at facebook.com On the Edge Show for more information on how you can be a part of our vision. We hope to see you there.
Now, back with more On the Edge.
Welcome back, everybody, to the On the Edge show with Katie Barnett and friends. I'm your host, Katie Barnett. We are discussing part three of our week-long Battling Domestic Violence. Tonight, we are discussing killing the breeding ground for our kids. We want to discuss what is going on with the fact that despite all of the anti-violence movements, despite all of the anti-domestic violence advocacy groups, despite all the laws in place, despite the new support, why is it that teen domestic violence is continuing to spread? What is it we can do about it? Why does it happen? What makes these children feel that they have to get into relationships, first of all, so early in life, and then be abusive in the process? What is it that we can do? We need to hear from people that are out there that have seen it happen to a loved one, have been through it, that have viewpoints on it. What is it that needs to be done? What is it that it comes from? What are some of the breeding ground factors? We actually have a panelist in, and I'm going to bring them in just a second. Oh, I think I lost them, so. Call back in if you can. We have got to get to the bottom of it, and we know where it comes from. We have heard it all. We have heard that parents are an issue. Children seeing it in the neighborhood is an issue. We spoke yesterday on some of the victims that people don't think are part of domestic violence. Your child, who's a child of watching the domestic abuse go on, may have a sleepover child, a kid sleeping over, and that person is a victim because they witnessed it, however long they've been there, however often. That person might turn out to think that the dad was cool for slapping his woman in the mouth and shut her mouth. Okay? That's one thing. That will breed the seed into the mind of a kid that could turn out to think that that was cool and do it to someone else. Why are these children continuing to become new abusers? What is it that community is failing to do? What is it that is failing these children to the point of they're becoming abusers? I believe our caller is back in, so let's try to get them in 1 second. Hi, welcome to the show, Chloe. You're on the air. Hello?
Hello.
Hi, welcome to the show, Chloe. You're on the air.
Hi. I believe that us children, well, us teenagers carry on what's done in our household because we feel as if it's right. Because we see our parents and we see the things, like we see our parents as our role model. We see them as that guide, they're the person who put us on our path, right? And if there's violence done in the household and violence surrounding us, that's what we're going to carry on. That's what we're going to be like, okay, this is okay because our parents do it. Yeah, it may hurt them. Yeah, we may see tears and other things along with it. But if there's not a stop to it done in our household or our parents putting a stop to it, we're going to think it's okay for us to carry it on.
Oh, wow. That is an absolute wonderful point. You said us, so I'm taking it you're a teen yourself?
Yes.
Okay, and you know what? Perfect, because you're like one of the greatest people who can stand and talk for your group, because I think that our listeners need to hear it from people that's standing there. Let me ask you a question. A teen in the house is watching this. We already know that's one of the classic symptoms or factors that's listed as a reason why. Do you think that it will help you make the decision not to repeat it, and will that be an easy thing?
It wouldn't be as easy. It would be something we wouldn't want to repeat. That I could agree on. But then at times, us as kids, we kind of rely back on our past, and we'll blame everything on our past. So if we're in a relationship and we feel like we're disrespected or whatever the case is, you know, in our past, if our parents were disrespected, they were fist fighting or there was something thrown, we're going to be like, okay, well, we end up living our past.
That's deep. May I ask your name, honey?
Damaris.
Well, thank you, Damaris, for joining my panel, because you know what? We usually talk as among ourselves as adults, and we don't hear from you guys. And tonight is about you guys. It's about you guys being victims and being being, you know, repeat offenders. And we can't blame you guys. You guys are still trying to find yourself. You guys, the village has failed you like crazy. The society is not really advocating for you anymore, despite what they said. And that is something that we know. The thing is, though, this is what we need to say to you.
Mm-hmm.
The part that you see, whether you know, and a lot of times children in domestic violence have been victims of it physically as well. Like if the abuser beat the mother or the father, they would as well beat you or beat the child as well. Your friends come over, that's embarrassing because most of the time the abusers don't calm themselves down when they're in one of their fits. Then again, you have the type of abusers that are very charming in public, and as soon as everybody goes home, you know, the nightmare starts. Do you think that part of the anger that you carry on going out is because that domestic violence puts some self-esteem issues into you when you're going out there? So you're trying to protect yourself from being hurt before somebody can hurt you.
Yeah, that's basically what we do. Because if we're hurt, the way we look at it is that, all right, our parents is our everything. They're that star that shines. And by getting hurt by them makes us feel as if they can hurt us, then anybody else can hurt us as worse. So that's how we see it. We see it as if, okay, they hurt us, then everybody else is out to hurt us. Because the way we see it is as if, all right, our parents brought us into the world. They gave us the love and caring, but they also abused us. So we're going to see it as if, all right, let's go out to the world, get in a relationship, whatever the case is. They're completely strangers. We're strangers until we get to know each other. But I'm going to look at it as if there's something inside of you that's out to hurt me. Just for the simple fact is, the person who gave me life and the person who loved me throughout as many years as it has been has hurt me for so long.
Whoa. See, that was a point that we were trying to bring out as well, and I'm glad that you said it as a team. That's absolutely true. One of the things that I remember growing up and feeling was this. In addition to what you said about our parents being our everything, there's one little small factor that I want to actually emphasize even more about that. When I remember thinking when I was younger that, like, you know, your parents, you feel like they can do everything. They can fight everybody and win every fight. They're Superman. They're whatever. I remember thinking, like, if my mom can't fight back, then that's what I'm supposed to have happen when I get older. I'm supposed to be quiet and take it, and I'm supposed to figure out what is it I did wrong.
Mm-hmm.
As a person, to make that person angry. I remember growing up wondering, what's wrong with me that this has to happen? I'm bringing candles and I'll get hit, or I'm bringing food and it's not good enough. You know, we don't know, and as children, especially looking at your parents, especially your dad beating up on your mom, or your mom, you know, being abusive to your father, we can't perceive that what we're seeing is not about what that abuser is saying out loud. We're seeing that it's got to be us, or that we did something wrong. We're not seeing that it's them that's wrong, dealing with their own anger in a way that they don't know how to. So it affects us. Now, growing up, right now, with the way society is, do you think that teen abuse victims don't feel that all these support groups in place are effective, or do you think that some of them are just so attached to their abusers that they're not even looking out to go seek help from these places?
I would have to say it's in between, because there are some help out there that can help, like that can help you become a better person and help you overlook what has happened to your past, such as counseling. I'm going to give an example. As me, I had domestic violence and whatever in my household and whatever the case was, but I used counseling as a way of expressing myself, as a way of trying to become a better person and not go through that path that my parents have went through. But now there are also programs out there that we would go to, and we would, they would say, yes, this is what's going to help you. This is going to help you be on your path. You know, you're depressed because of this, this, and this, and they put you under so much medication, and it just makes us worse.
You know what? I'm glad that you brought up the counseling issue, because one of the things we spoke about yesterday was this. Counseling, if there's no guarantee that even though the person seems to act a little better or is a little less intense or extreme than they were when they walked in, it doesn't necessarily mean that that person walked away from therapy feeling like something was resolved. But let me ask you a question. First of all, I agree with you. The medication of our teens, that's not the help, because whatever that medication is treating is a temporary fix. It's treating a symptom. It's not getting to the problem. It's not resolving the problem. It's not helping you deal with what caused you to go there in the first place. And some of these things, you know that there's a big joke about every time there's a new wonder drug, that the commercial has like about five little whispered side effects that are worse than what you're being treated for. You know, yes, I could feel better now with Lyrica. Side effects include, you know, and then you hear all of that. Here's my thing. You've gone to therapy. You've come from a domestic violence home. You're a little older now. Don't you still find yourself jumping at the sign of somebody being loud, or you still find yourself not able to say no to certain things? Okay.
Yeah.
That's one of the things that I know happens, and I can tell you that because I'm in my 40s, and after having gone through so many years of abuse and still coming out of it and standing my ground, I'm a lot better than before. But there are still little mannerisms and characteristics that you picked up from being programmed by the abuse that you still find yourself reacting to. Do you find yourself being overly aggressive to defend yourself when you think that there's a threat coming, or when somebody says something that sounds like when you grew up?
Yeah.
I've noticed that, too. I noticed that with a lot of the children, that they tend to be like, wait, what did you say? And they'll flash back to something that their abusers have said to them. And then instead of them, like, trying to talk it out or clarify it, they're going to react as they didn't react when the abusers were there.
Yeah.
Like, they're not going to get one off on me this time. So
yeah.
What would you say right now to us adults? What would you say right now to us adults that you feel is a problem that, you know, why it's still happening? Why? What is it that we fail you in that you feel we should look at or we should try to do better for you?
I feel as if parents or adults should, I would say, like, the things that you guys go through as an adult to keep it to yourself, not to have it, like, revolved around the kids, because that's, it affects on us. But then again, it's like there's also a side to that, because no matter as much as you hide it, at the end of the day, it's still going to come to the chandelier. You understand?
Right.
But there's things that parents have to understand, that sometimes having communication with us and not trying to hide everything and not trying to hide the scars, the bruises, can also help out a child understand why the mother is acting a certain way or why the father feels that certain way towards the mother. You understand?
Yes, and we spoke about that yesterday. So do you feel, because we did mention in part two yesterday, that we actually feel that it's time to teach our children about domestic violence, even young?
Yeah.
Okay, especially if they're in the middle of it, because we as parents do tend to think that trying to endure certain things ourselves, or if you as a child saw the bruise on your mother's eye or your father get whacked by your mom or something like that, we saw it, we see it, we know it's not, you know, a fairy tale. They, you know, as children, I'm saying. But we tend to think that we could say something like, you know, it's the boogeyman or something like that. That's not helping the children. And I think that they might resent their parents as they grow older, and that'll make them even angrier going forward. So tell me what you think about that theory.
Huh?
What do you think about that theory? Like, you know, do you think that us trying to protect you guys and, you know, trying to give you the soft view of what you saw is more harmful or helpful?
I think it's more harmful, because you may think you guys are protecting us, but to us, it feels like we're not being protective. Because, all right, let's say you guys are able to hide this throughout our whole life, and we end up finding it when we're in our 30s. But when we meet that one person who has probably been through domestic violence worse than what we have, or what we have known that we've been through, you know, we're going to get the effect. We're going to get the, you know, the beating that we never knew our parents got. Just as it was like this, they hid it from us. They never told us, listen, you know, if you see a guy that acts like this, this, and this, or a girl that acts like this, this, and this, you know, keep your eye out. You know, watch their move. Understand where they're coming from.
Absolutely.
That's
not
basically putting us out there in the world clueless.
You know, wow, you weren't even here yesterday. And that's something that we said as well. And that's something I live by. If you don't tell your children all about what the street is going to tell them, you are sending them out into the world half-loaded or walking in blind. And you're speaking, like I said, from the actual people that we're speaking about tonight. Why do you think that more and more children are getting involved with relationships early?
I believe it's to replace that missing parent. And the only reason why I say that is because there are some females and males out there that they look for that partner that can give them something their parent couldn't give them. You know, whether it's the love, whether it's the affection, you know, the attention, whatever the case is, we see it as, all right, we're young, we still look for these things in our parents, and they can't give it to us. So let's go out there in the world and let's try to find it, you know, within someone else.
Okay, let me ask you a question. Do you think that children that come from domestic violence looks to get a relationship because of it?
Oh, yeah, I didn't understand.
Yeah, oh, wait a minute. I think I worded that wrong. What I meant to say is, do you believe that children that come from domestic violence actually get into the relationship with early on, okay, and they look for, I'm sorry, I was, like I said, distracted. They look for the repeat abuser subconsciously to repeat the process.
I believe so, because we see it as if things ain't going right in the household, and this guy or this girl is helping us feel like we have freedom. Like, all right, you're taking us from this place that we called, you know, the horror house or the house that we don't want to be in. You know, they're helping us escape, and that's how we see them, as our escape. We don't see them nothing but nothing else. We may say we love them, you know, we care about you, yeah, you the world. No, what we actually think inside and how we actually see you is as our escape. You know, you is what's helping us escape from everything that's going on in our house and in our life.
And do you think that, with that being said, because, you know, of course, that's not the way you're supposed to start a relationship. That's no
mm-hmm.
foundation for a relationship. So do you think that that's what escalates into teen domestic violence? Things start to become resentful, reality starts to set in, and all the stars and glitter is gone?
Yeah, because once we escape, it's like, okay, we're out of there, and we feel as if, okay, so we get to relax and kind of sit back more. But what we believe we can do now is not what he or she is expecting. He or she is expecting what we used to do at home, or where we, you know, our little fear to stay there. So I believe after that, after seeing him or her as our escape and moving forward to that escape, you know, it leads to more violence in our case.
Let me ask you another thing, because I think this is something that we hear about, but I want to hear it from a live person. Why do you think that once the teen relationship becomes violent, that a lot of people say, and I'm speaking directly from teens, because I know why adult victims do it, but why do you think that we say now, even bringing up that specific example that we just said, that coming out of that, escaping the house of horror, and now it becomes domestically violent. Why do you think that it's so much harder for us to get teens to break up in that respect or to walk away?
I would have to say, well, it depends on how the relationship is, but it would have to be because of what the other person is bringing to the table. So let's say we escaped and whatever the case was, that person is giving us what we need. It's providing us with what we need. Because if we break up or whatever the situation is, that means I would have to go back to my house. That means I would have to go back to the drama, the hitting, the pushing, the screaming, all of that. But why would I want to do that? Why would I not want to stay and deal with a guy or a female that, yeah, may abuse me once in a while, but it's also providing for me and it's also my escape? That's just how us teens see it. We don't see it as if, you know, we need to run away from this person because, you know, yeah, he helped us out to get out of our house, but he's also doing what we figured he wouldn't do. But to us, it's like, okay, he's providing, you know, food, shelter, how whatever the case is. Why do we don't let it?
I think we lost her. Well, Damaris, if you're there, call back in because we lost you in your last half and you were really giving some great points. Ladies and gentlemen, you heard it from a teen. They will latch on to a person that has allowed them to escape from a house of horrors. They don't see it as, they don't see that person in their life as an abuser like they see their own parents as abusers. There are two different levels. We have to be able to learn how to keep the portions of our problems or our demons away from our children while we deal with it, as well as at the same time be able to teach them about what they're seeing. How do we do that? We have to remember that it's them first. We have to remember that and our role is them first, is beyond ourselves. So that means we have to get ourselves together so we could be good for them. This is the problem that seems to be happening. So many of these advocacy groups, as I said, are in place to treat a problem that has already happened. Nobody is watching when the children are escalating to this. You're not watching your children if there's a domestic violence dispute in your home, what it's actually doing to them. We tend to think that as long as they're not the ones getting hit by the person abusing us, that they're okay when they're not. We feel if we send them into another room, they're not affected by it because they don't see it or they don't hear it. But they know. They see what happens when they come out of the room the next day. Now, what happens with them? They're embarrassed if their friends came over and you guys acted up. That friend, as I said earlier, may not only be afraid because he probably has never seen it before, but might think that you're cool because she was yelling and screaming, and guess what? You slapped her and she shut up. Your child might grow up to repeat what you are doing if you're the abuser and then turn around and be one of those children that didn't get picked up in therapy, that nobody kept on eye on after the sessions were over, after the insurance ran out, after the 3 hours of long, strenuous sessions every day of the week took place. Nobody really figured out how the child was acting past the medications. Do we really know if that person is going to grow up and be that kid you're going to read about in the paper that killed his girlfriend or beat his girlfriend or beat her boyfriend or beat their partner? To the point where it escalated from just verbal abuse, then it was a shove, then it was actual beating, then it was murder. We have gotten to the part, and I believe our call is back, we have gotten to the part now where solutions need to be discussed. Welcome back, Damaris. Are you with me?
Yeah.
Okay. So we're having a lot of dropped calls because of the weather, so, you know, just bear with us. We're going to get to the part now, Damaris, of talking about solutions. Let's talk about solutions. Now, you brought up one thing. You spoke about how adults with their inner demons need to keep it to themselves, but at the same time, they need to be able to discuss what the effects are of domestic violence, how they're feeling, what it should be. That's a definite. Do you feel that these advocacy groups, these counselors, like you said, past the medications, are any of these people truly following up on you after you've gone to them for whatever the treatments are? Do you feel that these kids are getting actual continuous support?
No, they're not. And the only reason why I say so is because, yeah, we'll go to the counseling and everything else, but they're not constantly checking on us. We're being checked on, let's say, the day we have that appointment, which could be 2 weeks after or a month after. You know, I feel as if us as teenagers could help each other out. I don't feel as if the system or the little programs they have for us is what helps us. Sometimes it just takes two teenagers that went through the same case to be able to help each other out and help each other overlook the past.
And help somebody else who may not see that it's wrong. You guys could do that. Two of you can get together. First of all, let each other know that you have each other's back unconditionally, that you'll tell each other what's wrong, that you'll let them know if you think they're going to get back into the same thing they came out of. And when you two get together, then you can bring another one in. And slowly but surely, you can build that support network that knows what the adults have failed you at, that will fill in the blanks, that will keep it moving. Absolutely. The next thing you need to understand, and this is coming from a victim who's done it, who's still now, still got some little things that I swore to God was done and is still in place. And I had to realize that through yet another situation that I thought was long gone that popped up and presented itself. And with that being said, the physical stuff you go through or the incident of the moment, once you get the chance to look at that and reflect, even more things start to reveal themselves. Anybody that you are with that makes you feel that you have too much changing to do for their approval is not worth your time. Either they're not ready or they're not trying to be on the right path with you. So I'm telling you this from one person to another. When you are in a relationship and it's supposed to be about love, and you find yourself, A, doing more of the giving, B, having to feel a way to keep making a person happy even when there's nothing wrong or everything seems to be going good, they're not worth your time. When you have to forgive them for something like striking you, once they hit you, it's never going to stop. Once they hit you, it will never stop. And I'm going to say it again. Once they hit you, it will never stop. Once they start to get off that first degrading remark and you go for it, it's never going to stop. Once they found one tiny little crack in your whole entire exterior, in your whole barrier about you, they're going to keep digging.
Mm-hmm.
So when you see that happening, and you see that they're not doing certain things that people who are truly in love, Cola, I see you there. I'll bring you in just a minute. When you are in a relationship, and I'm gonna say this again, when you are in a relationship where if you're together and that person made it clear that you guys are exclusive and they love you and the word love comes out their mouth, if you are in a position where you got to constantly wonder what it is you're doing wrong because they always seem to be angry, unhappy, or detached, when you are constantly trying to wonder where they are because they haven't called you for hours on end, when they always are coming back to you by telling you that they lied about something and they have to keep explaining something over and over to you, when they start acting like suddenly what they loved about you when you were just you starts to become a problem and you have to start improvising where your friends, who the friends are that you keep. Where are you going? You got to report. You've got to figure out how you got to explain why you took a moment to go see your family. And you finally see that they're always apologizing to you for having done something to you, be it a bad word or a harsh move. They're abusers. When they constantly have to use the relationship to stand tall and stand up, they're abusers. When they are in a position that all on their own, they wouldn't be able to do something on their own and stand up on their own 2 feet. But as soon as you come around, suddenly they're king daughter or queen daughter, or they're big and they're bad, and then you become their joke in front of their friends, or you're the example that they make in front of their friends. They're abusers. When they make a joke and think it's funny and you find yourself not finding it funny and they don't turn around and go, wait a minute, that's not what I meant at all. Oh, no, I won't do that again. They're abusers.
Mm-hmm.
when they're constantly walking around trying to prove that they're smart or they're worth something, and they're telling you how stupid you are because you can't do the same or because you told them something that you feel if out of love is for their best interest, but they took it as a criticism and they turn on you, they're abusive or potential abusers. If everything that you get involved when you take on a partner in your life doesn't feel like an even partnership, doesn't feel like there's a give back when you're giving, they're not trying to do the same, if they're not trying to show you that they're just as happy to see you happy as you are to see them happy, they're abusers.
Mm-hmm.
If anything about the words I love you is painful in any sort of way, it's not love. First of all, at a certain age, you don't really know what the hell love is. You know you feel deeply about a person, but trust me, you don't know what love is. The feelings are there, the hormones are going, the mental state of happiness because you come out of something that was horrible. Let me explain this to you too, all of you teen victims and adult victims. When you have lived in a relationship or lived in an environment where all you have witnessed was the abnormal, the first time somebody does something that they're supposed to do for you, you're going to think it's a prince charming or a princess charming in the making. You're not going to really be able to make a sound decision as to whether or not this is as real and as true as it gets until you are okay with yourself and you are independent with yourself and you have addressed all of your problems and trauma from the place you came from so that you can see the world from a clear-cut view. That you could see everything around it, not just what you want to get out of. You're never going to be able to say, this is the person that is right for me. When you have gotten to the point of overcoming all the hell that you have gone through, all of the deprogramming it takes to get away from the things that your abuser have said for years, that you're nothing, you're worth getting beat up, you're never going to be anything. Until you have come full circle with not believing that anymore, with saying that I'm worth something, with saying that nobody is going to come into my life and be able to get the greatness I'm given without giving it back, you can't really say that that person is for you. You're not going to really be able to see past the flashy smiles and the sweet words to really see who they are, because all you're seeing is the sweet flowery cover and gift wrapping that came to you after you just came out of a dark tunnel. They're the first sign of light that you see, but you're not sure if that's the true light. You really can't. But you always have to remember that even if you don't know for sure, if it's not feeling right to you, it's not right. Let me bring in our panelists who've been patiently waiting, and don't go anywhere, Damaris, because they may have questions for you, okay?
Okay.
Welcome to the show, Corey. You're on the air.
Good evening, Lady Barnett, and good evening to all the listeners and the panelists that are joining us tonight.
Hi there, Deacon.
God bless you and your family.
Okay, Deacon, I know that this is a very touchy subject for you. You've lived it, and you've actually lost loved ones to it. We have a teen panelist on the air tonight. Her name is Damaris. Damaris, this is Deacon Williams. Say hello.
Hi.
Hey, Damaris, how are you?
I'm good, and you?
All right.
She's a very smart, bright, and very intelligent teen who's telling, spitting truth from the teen's point of view as it is.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I don't know if you feel up to it, Deacon, but if not, you can just pretty much tell her and tell the world what you feel the solutions could be and what she should be aware of and what teens should be aware of. If you feel like sharing your story, that's okay, but you
mm-hmm.
do not have to live it again. So, you know,
mm-hmm.
you have the mic.
Okay, first of all, let me start off by saying I want to apologize to the young people and the young adults because I feel like in our age bracket, we are the elder statesmen of our generation, and I feel as though a lot of us owe them an apology because we didn't set a better example. When we've had the privilege of having a better example set for us, and I call that a platform or a foundation, and we fail to give today's youth that knowledge and wisdom I feel as though we're weak on it. We might have given them a little bit, but it hasn't been much. And I like to apologize, be one of the ones that apologize, because I'm a believer in anytime you want to talk about what these young people are out here in the streets doing or what they're accepting in their lives, it comes from us. And that tells me that there was something wrong where we dropped the ball somewhere along the line. And a lot of the things that you see these young people out here doing, they're just imitating what they have learned. The only thing, they've taken it to another level.
Absolutely.
And I have to take some of that blame. And I'm a true believer in, instead of talking about these young people out here and the things that they're going through, whether it be domestic violence, whether it be whether they're committing some type of crime or something or anything like that, whatever it has to do with life, we have failed them along the way. And it's about time, long overdue, for us to pick up that ball that we dropped that was left for us. We had the privilege to learn from that. And I don't see it being fair of the youth today not learning what we have been blessed with. And that's always been a concern of mine. I think that would be one of the remedies of us start being more aware and looking back instead of talking about these children. Don't get your T's twisted. Don't talk about them. Teach them. Because
absolutely,
a lot of things that they're going through, they don't know any better because, like I said, we've dropped the ball.
And just like our team just said, Deacon, there are a lot of things that we have done where we're thinking we're doing the right thing, and it's not. Damaris spoke on the fact that while we need, adults definitely need to start addressing and accounting for their own nonsense. You know,
mm-hmm.
Really you do. You know what, when we spoke about some of these people have anger issues or don't really know how what's going on with them, I don't think that they don't know what's going on. I think they just don't want to address it. And what Erica
mm-hmm.
has said that she was on, I'm hoping to hear from her tonight before we go off, but what Erica mentioned was a very important factor. We were not taught how to deal with our anger, those people in that situation. Nobody gives them a positive outlet anymore. But as I was speaking about the fact with our kids, we lost the art that where we had that mentoring coach that used to say, if you're angry about something, I understand, tell me what's going on. Now get out on the field and take that anger out onto the game. Put that same anger and channel it into making the best game of your life. You know, they took away the
mm-hmm.
arts. They took away the extra people in place, the mentors that used to be of that village with the teachers and the parents. They took away the churches that you used to be able to go to no matter what your fault was or your class was. They took
mm-hmm.
away the people who used to have music so that whenever they were angry or sad or upset, they were able to go and blow their instrument or play that drum or do whatever it is and focus on that and distract themselves for a while. They took away drama class. They took away arts class. So they don't have it. But one thing that our team guest, thank you, Tamara, said, is on top of you keeping what's wrong with you from the adult standpoint between adults and keeping the kids out of it, what about the fact that there's a part where the kids are in it regardless of what? Your child saw that black eye, so you can't lie and say that, you know, mommy slipped and fell and the little bad monkey from the other side of the boogeyman land came and knocked them in the face with a mallet. You have to tell them what happened, and then you have to try to explain that this is coming from a place that this person may not mean to do it, but they are doing it, and it's dangerous because there's something that they need to address. The solution is definitely that. We have got to stop sending our children out into the world half-armed or not armed at all. We can't keep on teaching them the birds and the bees when they're walking outside and being called, you know, being saying that, you know, I want to hit the skins, I want to get the F word, or having some predator out there doing everything they can to get exactly what you're trying to sugarcoat. They saw the black eye. You can't unring the bell. They saw the busted lip. You can't unring the bell. You can't tell them that they didn't see what they saw. And then you can't push it under the rug either because they have to understand it. Let me bring our panelists in before I continue my point. Hang on. Welcome to the show, Cole. You're on the air.
Good evening, KD. This is Al Tariq calling in from Alabama.
All right, Al Tariq. What's up, my brother? God bless you.
Same here.
God bless you. Al Tariq, I'm going to give you the mic in just 1 minute. It's just I want to finish addressing. So let me say this to you, Team D, and to the listeners out there. Sometimes, especially in this day and age, when there are two people involved with this type of situation, victims don't know how to get out of it. Even when they've been given their own keys to freedom, they question it because the abuse in their head has told them there's no real freedom out there for you. You belong right here. So they don't know how to walk out and do it themselves. And even those that do, they don't know how to survive without what they know. Because no matter how bad the life is, no matter how disgusting it was, no matter how brutal and inhumane it was, it's all they know. It's all they know. It's like people that go to jail for years on end. They don't want to be there. They dream of freedom. They finally get it. But guess what happens? The world ain't so nice or cool or even familiar to them anymore. So they do everything they can to sabotage it and go back. Because they were told how to get up in the morning. They were told when they were going to get meals. They were told when they could go clean up. They were told when they can go outside and have a little yard exercise. They're told something. They may not like it, but it's all they know. And it takes deprogramming. But I'm going to tell you young people, because as much as you've put yourself into an adult situation, do understand this. You have a whole life ahead of you to learn and to teach. You can take what's going on with you now, love yourself. You, Damaris, are one of the lucky ones. You know why? One of the blessed ones. And I don't believe in luck, but I'm going to tell you this. You actually sat there and said, by the time your therapist finished medicating you, you're worse off. So that means you're one of the people who are aware of it.
Mm-hmm.
That means that you can say, even now, I feel bad. This is all I know. This is what I came from. This is it. You don't like it, and you want to do something about it. And I do know one thing, honey. It's not easy to, though. It is not easy. It is not easy to sit there and say, you know what? To hell with that. You're wrong. Because sometimes we're saying it, but we haven't really connected with it. It's like we need to hear it on one of those self-help tapes that go, I can get up in the morning. I do love myself. You could say it, doesn't mean you connected with it. Because how can you say that so easily when all the hell you've been told was you need to get your ass kicked, you need to go up and do something, you're fat, you're stupid, you're ugly, you're never going to be anything. Get over there. This wasn't good enough. You got kicked. No matter how many things that you brought in to show signs of achievement that someone should be proud of, this person always said it wasn't good enough. So it's not easy to sit there and have some guru on a tape go, I think I can, I think I can, I think I can, I think I can. But you got to keep saying it and start living one little step at a time till you get it. Because anybody who could give birth to a child, anybody who created a child and can walk away and look at them like they are nothing has a problem. Anybody that don't have that instant love to sit there and go, oh, my God, this is my child, this is beautiful, this is of me, has a problem. Something happened to them that they were never allowed to address, that they felt like a punk for, like they felt like a victim, helpless punk or nothing for. And they're trying to alleviate that by taking out on somebody else that can't fight back, or somebody like a child where they have the natural authority over and that you have to do everything they say. That's a safe bet that they're going to win each fight every time. So what you need to do now is you know exactly what it is you hated about whatever you came from. The first thing you can do is choose never to put anybody else through that. The second thing you need to do is to look at each second, not even every day. That's garbage and nonsense. Every second that you made it out and every second that you breathe and you breathe through the pain, guess what? You survived. Now take it and tell myself, I made it through another second. What am I going to do with the precious second that's coming up? Start understanding you are not responsible for somebody else's demons. Start understanding that, especially if it came from your parent, the only damn thing you did wrong was be born to them. Whatever their problems were supposed to be their problems.
And that goes for anybody that's supposed to be your partner in life. If they had you there and you did everything right and they didn't know how to receive it, they have a problem. As much as it's hard to feel that way because it's always coming back to you, they have the problem. They have the problem. And before they turn you into something that you're not, you have to walk away. And you got to stand your ground. And honey, sometimes you're looking at that person that you gave your heart to, and it's hard to remember that that sis was part of the love. It's hard to remember that that guy that kissed you so nicely and loved you so well during the sexual terms can't stand the sight of you when the bedtime is over. But when you walk away, don't look back. Because if it's meant to be, that person is going to change and want you back. And if it's not, in the teen years anyway, there's really very few times where you meet that high school sweetheart you grow old and die with. But when you walk away, don't look back and don't let him bring you down. At the end of the week, when we do our finale, it's going to be just about that. Those people that did walk away, those people that did leave it behind, but the abusers won't let it go. You walk away. You look at yourself every day, and no matter what you find wrong with you, let it be something that you want to choose to change for you, not to change to be approved by anybody, but because I don't like my hair long, I want to cut it. I don't like my hair blonde, I'm going to go red. Let it be that that's what you want to do for your own personal change of pace, not because he said, I like her better because she has red hair. Anybody that makes you have to alter you for their damn approval, you'll never get it because that person doesn't know what they want.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to tell you that. Oh, there's another panelist coming in. So, Al Tariq, you're going to have the mic first, and let me just bring our panelists in, okay? 1 second. Erica, welcome to the show, honey. Hello? Okay.
Hi, Katie.
Okay, hi, Erica. How are you? All right. You're going to be up after Al Tariq, okay, dear? Hold on. Al Tariq, okay. Babe, go ahead. And thank you guys for listening, you know, to me. So, go ahead, Al Tariq.
Yeah, I just basically, we've been speaking on it, just, you know, really opened my eyes as to how deep that, you know, a person can, you know, a person can love a person and take abuse from that person that they love, you know, and that's a real deep film. And like I know somebody personally as well. You know,
hey, Ian, before you go, you want to stick up there?
It's background noise.
Yeah, I thought that they were the one of the toughest, you know, girls that I knew growing up. You know, and just to even hear that was a situation that she had been through, you know, it just kind of blew my mind, you know. And it's just that, like how you said, when the sex and all that stuff come down and you let a person and lower your self-esteem, I guess once they lower your self-esteem, you know, then the rest of it is pretty much, you know, easy to eat, you know. That's one thing. I could definitely be able to teach them about these things and to never let anybody, you know, especially people who claim they love you, treat you and try to break you down, because if anybody's going to even try to start doing anything like that, you know, the children coming up must know, you know, and have the older people teach them that right there is your sign to let them go. As soon as they even try to lower you and lower your value as a person in any kind of way, because anyone who loves us, regardless, you know, even if it's a close personal relationship or if it's a brother, sister, whatever, when they love you, they're there to help elevate you. Help you through hard times, not cause hard times for you.
Absolutely. My God, that was powerful. And yes, you're right.
You're right, Al Tariq, with regards to the toughest person could seem like the biggest punk when it comes down to being an abuse victim. And that you, it has to be understood because people, I swear that I talk to some of the most generous-minded people, the most biggest, beautiful-spirited people who are just so ignorant to the myth of a victim's mindset. So ignorant to it, and then some of them are so judgmental because they've never walked a day in those shoes. You don't understand what it's like that even after you have been long gone out of the situation where there's not even a threat in your face, that you still jump at certain sounds. You still get defensive with certain actions. Even after you've gone through it, therapy doesn't help that. Therapy doesn't help that. Therapy stops when the clock runs out. You still have to go on with your own devices and learn how to do certain things. And if you don't have a person that's in there that's going, stop it, stop it, stop it, that person, it was totally wrong. That was a totally wrong situation. Look like this. Don't worry, I got you. You don't have to worry about it. You have to figure out, coming from a broken, fractured, fragmented state, how to be whole again. And you got to learn how to be whole. You know what? It's like those people that are, like, perfectly physically fit all their life, and then they have that first baby, that one baby, that everything changed with their body. And no matter how physically fit they look, there's still the signs that they were once pregnant and had given birth. There's still a stretch mark here, even though everything else about them looks good. There's a little bit of that jelly in the stomach after birth. Okay? It's like that. It's like you having to get whole again after being fractured and fractured and fractured and broken. It'll never be the same.
That's right.
And for young kids, it's harder, especially nowadays. For young kids, it's harder because you are talking about adult abusers that are ignorant and supposed to be mature, that got issues and they're angry and they act like kids in the schoolyard. Imagine how much harder it is for any kid, a child who's naturally confused, who's naturally in what I like to call the stupid phase, who's naturally exploring and still trying to figure out the stars from the trees, from the forest, from the celestial gatherings up there in the sky. How the hell are they supposed to get through all of that and try to be adults in an adult situation that they weren't ready for yet? If an adult can't do it when they've already lived their time out. Erica, you with me, baby?
Yes, I am.
All right. Well, what's your spin on it, darling?
Well, first of all, especially when it comes to the younger generation, I've come to realize hurt people hurt people. People that are hurting tend to hurt other people. Now, again, that's no excuse. There's, of course, never an excuse to, you know, place your energy, your negative energy or your emotions out on and take it out on someone else. But oftentimes, you know, when someone decides to hit someone, it's because they're hurting about someone. They're having pain about something, and they don't know how to express it. Now, I don't know too much about teen domestic violence. I know it exists, but I say that because I've never gone through it. I've heard people talk about it as far as, you know, in high school, you know, such and such and such and such, be beaten on such and such and such and such. But at the end of the day, you never set that bar as your relationship standard. Never set the bar of someone physically or mentally or verbally abusing you to be your relationship standard. Because at the end of the day, if being a teen, if your standard is getting hit on and allowing someone to hit on you, then when you become an adult, it gets worse. Because that's
absolutely
what you're doing. Break it now. Now, I lost my mother to domestic violence. I was only 19 years old when my mother was killed. My stepfather, her and my stepfather used to fight when I was in high school, but to tell you the truth, I never really paid any attention. I had learned to tune it out. I learned to tune out the arguing, fussing, and fighting. I knew what was going on. I would just close my door and keep it moving. My stepfather was an alcoholic. After I joined the Navy, my mother said it was enough. And truthfully, my mother only got with him because he was older. He owned his own home. He was about to retire. He was like 18 years older than my mom. and he offered her stability for my brother and I. But after I graduated high school, my mother couldn't take it anymore, and she decided to leave. And he had that if I can't have you, no one will mentality, so he paid someone to kill my mom.
Are you kidding me?
Yes, he paid a crackhead $3,000 to kill my mom.
Oh, my God. Oh, my goodness.
So with that being said, as soon as you get in, when you notice it, get out. Because at the end of the day, he didn't hurt my mother because my mother was gone. He hurt the family. He left the family behind hurting and in pain. So when you're in a relationship and you're thinking, you know, you're not realizing how many people are hurting along with you by staying in an unhealthy relationship. As soon as you're in it, recognize it for what it is and leave. There's not enough monetary stability, financial stability. There's not enough any of that to stay in any unhealthy relationship. It's not worth it. If you can get out alive, that's good. But people oftentimes don't realize there's a lot of people don't make it out alive. Earlier this week, Sunday or Monday, this guy killed his pregnant wife, a young black guy, killed his pregnant wife. And to put it this way, they don't start off killing you. It don't start off with, bam, I'm going to take this gun and shoot you. It start off verbally. Then it goes to physical. They're going to stretch you and test you as far as they can take you. And then you end up dead. You better believe if you look at any relationship where a spouse has killed their significant other, 9 times out of 10, it didn't start off with the death. It started off with some type of previous abuse.
It's so important that you say that. It's so important that we repeat the same old, because this is something the children... You said you didn't understand teen domestic violence. I've been abused through my teen years all the way up until about 7 years ago. And I'm going to tell you that if somebody had said the same things over and over, we would have gotten it. If the people in my life would have said, listen, that's not good. Let's get out of it. I got your back. Instead of sitting back and whispering about it at parties. Maybe half of those years would have been ended. If somebody would have stood up to the damn bastard that was sitting up there chasing me down and finding out where I was and trying to hurt me in front of our kids and trying to hurt me in front of them, perhaps this wouldn't have happened. And I was blessed enough that God chose me to get through it so I could be sitting in a radio seat to talk about it. But you cowardly people around them, you jerks that want to get in the business and talk about it and make a movie out of it, stand the hell up and protect your seats. Stand up. I'm sorry, Erica, and I will give it right back to you.
You know, a lot of the times, and I often say, when I came to Alabama to visit this guy that claimed he had been liking me since high school, I was like, well, I'm staying at my brother's house. Won't you come visit me? He was like, oh, you're staying with your brother? I'm like, yeah. So he was like, no, I'm scared of your brother in high school. I'm scared of him now. He jokingly said it. But I say this to say that when I'm at home, any man know not to mess with me because they know who my brother is. My brother, best friend, and I just saw him today. He was like, I didn't know you was in town, but you know your brother don't tell nobody that. He told me when I first saw you, I said, dang, who's that? He said, me and your brother were sitting on the porch smoking a blunt. He said, your brother put that blunt down and said, let me tell you something. He said, this is when me and your brother first became friends. He said, you see that girl right there? He said, I love her more than anything. Man, you could be cool and we could be the best of friends, but you better not ever in your life again look at my sister. And he said, he was like, your brother told everybody that. My brother placed fear in men, little boys back then, that they automatically knew. They off the top knew. Now that I think about it, I do recall a time I was in the 9th grade, ROTC. This guy hit me. He punched me upside the head. I called my mama, and I was crying, and I told her that the boy hit me. My mother came up there with my brother and my cousin. The Air Force colonel was upset. He told my mother she was promoting violence and she shouldn't have brought my brother up there. They would take care of it. My mother said, uh-uh, because he going to know. And any other man going to know not to touch that one right there. Whether my mama was right or wrong, that's neither here or there. But at the end of the day, if more men was to stand up and say, you can't hit my cousin, you can't hit my sister, you can't hit my niece, because there's going to be consequences behind you hitting them, I guarantee you a lot of men will think twice before they do it.
And I can
guarantee you that. That's where that village come into place. Because you can't pay a guy around here to talk bad about me or to hit me in a town that I'm in. Because my brother will let you know I love living, but when it comes to my sister, I don't have anything to lose. And that's how he feel about me. When it comes to his sister, he has nothing to lose whatsoever.
And I can guarantee you that it helped you make better decisions than who you would accept into your life. Regardless, even though sometimes things could still go wrong. I'll tell you this. As parents, if you are walking and you're creating an abusive environment, you're not protecting your children in any way by allowing them to see that that's what you accepted to happen from both ends, the abuser and the victim. But I will say this. Instead of this village sitting around, as I said before, and bringing up popcorn to the local neighborhood domestic violence fight, you need to step up because these children need to understand that there's a certain thing that love means and it's only one way it's supposed to go. There's no such thing as loving somebody to death, not like that. Not where love is supposed to mean if you want that person to be happy as you should be happy. Love means you can walk away and still respect that person. Love means that if I made a mistake and that person chose to walk, as bad as it hurts me, I need to let them do that. This is the problem. Too many people have dropped the ball, but too many people who still don't like the fact that they see it, they would like to do something. Since they feel like they've messed up, they don't know how to do it. So let me tell you something, all of you out there who think that way. You don't have the right to sit there and be a damn coward. Choke it up, smack it down, and get the hell up and pick the ball up. You know why? If you don't know how to do it, then you better think and talk their language since you're spending all your time trying to dress like them anyway. They love their stuff. You know what? You make them understand. You know what? You love your iPhone, right? What would you do for your iPhone? You protect it. You buy the screen cover. You make sure your little brothers and sisters don't touch it. You make sure that it's put safely away where you cherish it, right? That's what you're supposed to do in a relationship. That's what you should tell an abuser. And that's what you need to tell a victim. You are that iPhone. And he's supposed to be your protector. Or she's supposed to be your protector. When you leave the safety net of your home and you're supposed to be in a safe home when you're born and you're getting into your life, that person is supposed to pick up the ball and continue that process. At any point in time when you don't feel protected or you don't feel cherished, you need to be walking or figuring out what's your next option.
You know what, Katie? My ex, his ex-wife used to get beat on by her boyfriend. And it came back to us that her boyfriend was beating on her in front of the kids, in front of his kids. And I remember being pregnant, and he verbally abused me. And this is what I looked at him and told him. I said, you have two girls right now. I said, look at your daughters, listening to how you talk to me. I said, they watching their mother get beat at home. Then they're listening to you right now verbally abuse me. I said, if this is their norm, and everybody is willing to accept their norm, whatever your norm is, you're going to accept it because that's normal. But on top of that, everybody is always willing to go outside of their norm just a little bit. I said, so if you're going to let your daughter's norm be watching their mother get abused and then you think you're going to talk to me in any kind of way, what are they going to accept from their husband or their man?
And where would you think you would have the right to have a damn thing to say about it?
Exactly. I said at the end of the day, I said you got to watch what you put your kids through. Because whatever you put them through, not all the time, if there's always exceptions to every rule, but for the most part, whatever you put your kids through, if they watch it, that's their norm, and they're willing to go outside of their norm to another level. And I even realize now with my ex, he likes that kind of thing. Because my son tells me all the time how him and his girlfriend fuss and fight now. How she destroys the house, and they always into it, the drama of it all. I had to realize with him, we wouldn't have never made it because he liked drama. Some people, he grew up with domestic violence. He grew up with his mom and dad fussing and fighting. His mom beat on him. So to him, he only knows how to cope with drama. To him, drama in a relationship is how the relationship should function. So we need to, as adults, stop that cycle of it being a norm. Learn how to function in peace. Teach one another that it's okay to function in peace.
You're because absolutely right.
At the end of the day, if that's all you know, that's all you're going to want to know because it's comfortable with you. And we have to realize that sometimes violence is someone's comfort zone because that's all they know. And it's sad, but that's all they know is violence. And to them, it makes them feel comfortable.
Now, you said you didn't know about teen domestic violence, but you just mentioned something in your ex's past that is exactly where it comes from. And now we still have a few more minutes to speak on the solution aspect. It is way more. I asked the question in the pre-broadcast discussion. With all of the advocacy groups that we now have in place, that was a taboo back in our day. You didn't talk about domestic violence in public. Husbands wasn't ridiculed for hitting on their wives. They were counseled with their little buddies on the side, but nobody ever got on a husband for what they did behind closed doors. Then later on, it became the neighborhood wouldn't dare allow a man to touch on a woman like that. Now that's gone. Now there's advocacy groups. Now there's public awareness. Now it's a roundtable discussion thing. Why the hell is it then that with all of these anti-violence movements, anti-domestic violence, Safe Horizons, all of these things, is teen domestic violence becoming more and more and more widespread, more cases, and it's increasing? Here's one of the reasons why. All of these advocacy places are in place after the fact. They didn't see the root of the problem. That's not their job. Their job is to take what comes out of something. Guess what? That's the parent's job. That's the teacher's job. That's the village's job. It's your pastor's job out there to keep your damn doors open and keep your communities in check. To keep the spirituality in check. To remind these abusers that there's a place to go. That's one. That's two. That's three. It's your job, fathers, to teach your sons that it's okay to say, I'm upset and I don't know what to do about it. It's your job, mothers, to tell your daughters that they are pretty without having to go all over the place. That it's supposed to be their choice to want to change the styles that they wear. And that anybody in their life is supposed to love them enough to say, I may not agree with the style, but I love you no matter what you choose. That way, we don't have these girls looking for the Prince Charming because they don't like where they're coming from. And that way, we don't have these guys feeling like the only way they're real men is if they got a girl with a mouth that they punched in it. We need to learn how to channel ourselves as adults. Even if you grew up with the machismo teaching, maybe you could look at your kid and say, I didn't like the way it felt then. Why would I want to make you go through this? For the rest of you in the community, it's your job to make sure that these weeds don't fester in the community garden. You men, step the hell up and stop another guy from beating on his wife's girlfriend or significant other in front of your kids in the neighborhood. Prevent the tragedy of a death happening where everybody's got to come out at 3 o'clock in the morning in their robes to see a corpse be dragged out of your neighbor's house. to those of you out there that thinks it's funny or that feels the need to look out your little blinds and curtains and validate your boring TV time with some real-life action from somebody you brush elbows with in the supermarket, laundromat, or school meeting every single day, and you turn your back, you are just as guilty of being an abuser as the abuser that did it. And you might have the problem of one day dealing with the kid that watched this happen, and all of you turned your back growing up, not knowing how to deal with what he saw or deal with what he feels, becoming somebody who's in your backyard dating your daughter or dating your son or shooting your daughter or your son, God forbid. Starting with you, Al-Tariq, what do you feel is a solution that we could do to help not just domestic violence but teen violence come to at least a slowdown?
Well, like I said, the main thing that we can do is that they have to be taught, but at the same time, you know, the kids, they see it. And as men, you know, of course, we have to teach our younger men how to vent frustration and stuff like that, you know, because certain other frustrations can lead to the frustration of violence, you know, not only against women, but against other men as well, which we see on the streets today. You know, it's a lot that's going on and that does these things. So we have to teach them, you know, to better ways to vent their anger and how to be more creative and a way and a better ways to be more creative when we have things on our mind. You know, because when you're doing those things, you're not using your mind. You're using, you know, you're just thinking about, you know, well, let me punch this and it'll make me feel better or something like that. And that's just not the way that you do things. You know, a real man or woman uses their head, you know, and that's what we have to teach these children, to use their mind. Because if you're always trying to physically abuse somebody, you know, you're not doing anybody any good. You know, you're either going to hurt them or kill them and get yourself in trouble in the process. So that's just two people lost, you know, in the world. And then like Erica said, you're hurting that person's family. And if you're that way, you know, and you could be hurting your own family as well when you do something like that, because if you kill them, you know, you're going to wind up in jail more than likely yourself. So then that's bad for everybody concerned. I even know of a person rather who killed someone in a domestic violence type thing. He told me, now he had been getting, he was a childhood buddy of mine, all the girls loved him. He got with this one woman and then he wound up killing her, you know. And this was many years ago, and I had got in some trouble. I was in the county in New Jersey. Now I seen him, he came through, he bonded out about 7 days later. Guess what? He made the front page after about 3 days after getting out. He said, man, I can't live without. I said, she don't want you. We was telling him, Quincy, if she doesn't want you, leave her alone. I said, man, you used to have girls falling at your feet. What's wrong with you, man? Wake up. Well, man, I just can't live without her, man. I just can't see it. And guess what?
So why abuse her?
Yeah, he shot her in the head and he shot himself.
Coward.
And the two kids were standing there left alone. You know,
that's a
so
damn
you
coward.
Know, so my God, it's just, this has to stop.
And died like a coward.
Mm-hmm.
If you can't live without a person, why the hell do you freaking abuse them? That is a question, which will be addressed tomorrow.
Yep.
You know what? 6 minutes left. I need to give Deacon the mic for a sec, Erica.
Okay.
Deacon, you know, thoughts on solutions. Hello? Okay, Erica, go ahead.
Al-Tariq touched on something that I said earlier this week, the first night that you had the series, that we have to teach our young men and women how to deal with anger. how to place that anger, how to let it out in a positive outlet versus taking it out on someone else. That's the biggest key, and that's the only way we will end domestic violence, is to teach people how to deal with their anger. If you can't teach someone how to deal with their anger, the first thing they're going to do is to let it out on someone. It starts as young as babies hitting when they get upset, having some tantrums when they get upset. You have to teach them and show them how to redirect that anger. Because I tell people about their kids all the time that they're building buildings. They're making buildings called prisons. And those prisons are full of adults that didn't learn how to control their anger as kids. That's what they do. They place out, especially our young black men, in these large facilities and enslave them to teach them how to deal and control their anger.
Absolutely, and I have to expand on that. Like I said, we just got a few minutes left. It's that definitely, that is the first, I believe, first most biggest foundation is to teach that anger. Then it's accountability. There's so many damn abusers that are out there with the anger problem and with lack of accountability. And I spoke about that with these fostering parents. With these parents that bail them out of all the things they've done wrong, with not standing by them but pointing out that they were wrong and the consequences they're getting is because of the choice they make. So they get that. We do have to do that, and we do have to teach them accountability. We have to teach them that you broke your toy, you don't like the fact that it's broken, you want another one too late, sorry. That is the problem. And how dare you, you know, in teaching them that, Maybe we wouldn't have people who walk around abusing something good they have, then saying, I can't live without her, and wind up shooting her and themselves. So that bastard lived and died like a coward. And here's the other thing. Here's another thing we need to teach our kids right now. How about you start getting to know a person a little more and start really looking at the signs and realize that if every time or even the first time you had a disagreement, it wind up getting to the point of a yelling match and the desire to hit, you walk away and don't be with that person. That is where we're at. So I need to, tomorrow we're going to be addressing the abusers. Both sides. We're going to hear from them, hopefully, and we're going to talk to them, and we're going to make it all come out. We're going to teach them something, Erica. Perhaps maybe we could tell an abuser who's probably not listening exactly how it works. If you want something, you cherish it. Dr. Meek, you wanted to say something, hon?
Yeah, I just wanted to say, you know, we have to change, and this is a big part of it as well. You know, domestic violence is a big part of it, you know, rather if it's physical or otherwise, and it runs very deep. It's something that really has to be addressed, because if the man and woman can't get it together, all the other things we talking about that we need to get done will never be done, because without us working together, nothing else will work, really.
Absolutely. Absolutely. You always come with that pistol oil, I'll tell you that much. You too, Erica, always on fire. I thank you very much. Deacon, thank you very much. I want to say a special thank you to our guest, Mr. Maris, that walked in and gave us point of view from the actual people we're speaking on tonight. You guys pay attention. All of you out there listening, you teens that are listening, you parents of teens, those of you that are fostering your sons and daughters in a grown age and not standing your ground, you community people who's pointing their fingers and whispering, you pay attention. Because we're failing miserably. We're failing miserably, and our children are going to wind up either being under the dirt or under the jail cell. So until tomorrow night, everybody, be blessed, be a blessing, make a difference, and God bless you.
Back at
On the Edge, real talk about real issues.